We're checking in on several different headlines related to PFAS chemicals in Wisconsin. Often called forever chemicals, they're found in water as a result of various kinds of industry, and they're linked to a number of health concerns. This week, WPR News reported on a new lawsuit filed by the town of Peshtigo against Marinette manufacturer Tyco and 100 other companies related to water contamination in firefighting foam. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources this week also launched a new PFAS location information tool. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are these forever chemicals at issue in your community? Have you been dealing with contamination problems where you live? Have you had to get an alternate water supply? What questions do you have about what's going on? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll start in the town of Peshtigo. Trigvi Root is a resident of the town and a member of the town's ad hoc water committee. He also sits on the Marinette County Board of Supervisors. Trigvi, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Can you start by describing how you've personally been affected by PFAS where you live?
Well, I'm in the town of Peshtigo, just a short distance out of the city of Marinette. I'm in the neighborhood that I've basically lived my entire life, three houses in the same neighborhood. But my home that I'm currently in has a contaminated deep water well. And I've been supplied bottled water. And also I have what's called a POET system installed on my water system to treat the water that comes into the house from my well. So I am, yes, absolutely, definitely impacted.
You're not, I understand, officially a plaintiff in this suit, but can you talk about the main argument now in this suit that the town has filed against these companies?
Yeah, from what I read, and I just read through this suit yesterday myself, like a lot of folks, the big issue is supplying the town of Peshtigo residents that have been impacted by this PFAS contamination is getting us a source of good, clean, permanent drinking water. And it's been a struggle. So the town has decided that suit to hopefully get the offending party to pick up the tab and get this moving was the way to go. So suit filed, and unfortunately these things don't move fast, but we'll see what happens.
Now, you're on the water committee. What is the mood like among, you know, your neighbors and other residents of the town around this water issue?
I think the biggest mood right now is people just want this over with. This has been going on since 2017. At that time, you know, back when we got letters from Tyco saying, you know, we know there's an issue. Your well may have contamination in it, and we want to come and check your well. Shortly after that, they offered that they would supply us City of Marinette drinking water to take care of this problem. Of course, here we are in 2022. We still don't have the City of Marinette drinking water. And so people are frustrated, and they want us to be over with, have a solution at this point in time.
And as we wrap up, Trigvi, are you hoping that you're going to end up with some kind of municipal water system as opposed to dealing with the well water?
Yeah, correct. I mean, the treatment systems that I and about 40 other residents have on our wells, it's addressing the issue, but it's not a long-term solution. These things are expensive to maintain. They're a hassle. I have someone here at my house probably 6 to 8 times a year doing maintenance on these things. So, yeah, the end goal is to have some sort of municipal water. The least expensive and the easiest is from the City of Marinette. So that's what we're all hoping for. It may not be what happens, but that would be the simplest and easiest.
Trigvi, thanks for sharing your story with us today.
All right, thank you.
Trigvi Root is a resident of the town of Peshtigo. He talked to us about his experience with PFAS contamination in his well and the new lawsuit the town filed against Tyco and 100 other companies for PFAS contamination. David Strifling joins us now, director of the Water Law and Policy Initiative at Marquette University. Dave, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Good to be with you again. Thanks for having me.
What are your thoughts on hearing what Trigvi had to say and this town of Peshtigo lawsuit?
Well, it's quite a story, obviously, and it's something that Wisconsin's been dealing with for some time now, and I anticipate it's going to continue into the future. The thing about the lawsuit, and like Trevi, I've just been reading it myself as it's come out in the last couple of days, the lawsuit relies on what are called common law causes of action, things like nuisance, negligence, trespass. And the reason we have statutes like CERCLA, the Superfund law at the federal level, and the spills law at the state level, is that those kind of common law allegations can be difficult to prove. Causation specifically is often difficult. So, you know, it's not going to be easy for the town. I wouldn't give any opinion on the merits, but it's a difficult case to make.
In this kind of case, does it matter whether or not a company knew that these chemicals were potentially harmful? Or can they claim, yeah, we admitted them, but we didn't know at the time they were not that they were harmful?
So that's the big difference between, say, a suit in negligence and a suit under the federal CERCLA or Superfund statute. With negligence, it's a lot more difficult to prove a duty if the company can correctly say that they didn't know about it. Under the Superfund statute, you know, if the EPA were to come in and sue the companies under that law, there's no such requirement. A lack of knowledge is not a defense under that law. So, you know, from the town's perspective, I'm sure they would love it if EPA would come in or the Federal Department of Justice and sue the companies under the Superfund law. And EPA has taken some preliminary steps to allow just that possibility. It earlier this summer listed a couple of the PFAS chemicals as hazardous substances under CERCLA, which would allow that kind of a lawsuit. So, you know, much yet to be determined. And I would say that this lawsuit by the town is just kind of an opening salvo.
And we've seen a response from at least one of the companies involved saying, hey, we were negotiating in good faith, trying to come up with a solution. We didn't need this to go to the courts in effect in the first place. But we heard Trigby saying, you know, he was first notified in 2017 and is still waiting for solutions. Have you seen in other communities, Dave, successful accommodations without lawsuits causing them?
I can't, nothing comes to mind. And often people file lawsuits when they just get frustrated with the pace of negotiations. You know, it's one more tool, I guess, that you have in your back pocket. And of course, we know that most lawsuits settle. So I'm sure the town would still like to negotiate with the companies and, you know, get them to cover the costs that the town thinks they should cover. Filing a lawsuit doesn't mean that that can't happen. It's just a way to hopefully accelerate the pace of negotiations, at least in some cases.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jennifer is with us in Marinette. Jennifer, hi.
Hello. Thank you for having me. So the reason I was calling was I think that there needs to be a good representation of what the majority of Town of Peshtigo residents want. Right now, we do not have that with our current town board. They are definitely the most vocal. But the majority of town residents are very frustrated with this litigation. It's going to cost the town. There are statements that are being made that it will not cost any of the town taxpayers, that Tyco will foot the bill for the water utility district forever. There are just claims that are not feasible. Currently, Tyco has been working very cooperatively with the town residents trying to come up with a solution. Right now, annexation to the city of Marinette is on the table. Individual deep wells is on the table. Even the town's plan was one of the options that was offered, but the majority of residents did not want that. So really, you know, the town is going against what the residents want, whereas Tyco is cooperatively working with us.
Jennifer, thanks for the call. We don't, of course, have surveys showing how many people on the town are on one side or the other, Dave, but not everybody is necessarily on the same page.
Yeah, and this is common when, you know, a plaintiff takes this kind of action in a municipality setting. Not everybody agrees. And like you said, I'm certainly not privy to the financial arrangements between the town and its lawyers or how many residents feel which way. But it's not common to have some difference of opinion on these kind of things.
Jennifer, thanks a lot for sharing your local perspective. We're going to continue talking about PFAS in Wisconsin, including a new PFAS location information tool from the state DNR. David Strifling, director of the Water Law and Policy Initiative at Marquette University, stays with us. You can join in at 800-642-1234. The town of Peshtigo is not the only place in the state where this is a story. What's going on near you and your community? What solutions are you looking for? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about PFAS news here in Wisconsin. The DNR just launched a new information tool that the public can access to find out about this kind of chemical contamination in their local community and testing and more. Earlier today, I talked to Mimi Johnson, director of the DNR's Office of Emerging Contaminants. What kind of data can we see in this new online tool?
Yeah, so we have four primary levels of data that are there. One is our PFAS sites, kind of where we know there's PFAS contamination, and that leans on our remediation and redevelopment programs data set. Another layer is our drinking water data, and currently that's all of our results from our 140 systems across the state that sampled through a voluntary sampling program this last year. We also have a layer of fish and consumption advisory data from our fish and wildlife program at the agency. And then our final layer of data is from our surface water database that has information about where we've sampled across all of the water bodies in Wisconsin.
Now, this is all available to the public. Who are you hoping uses this information?
Anyone. We really want to continue to have the conversation about PFAS. We want to put the information out there in as accessible a format as possible. And through this tool, if you want to get into the weeds into any of these data sets, it'll link you back to their kind of host site and area on our DNR web page so that you can really dive into the data. But at a bigger level, you know, this tool layers these pieces so you can just take a look at the whole state, or you can drill into a specific address as well.
And what are you hoping people do with the data on the online tool?
That's a great question. I mean, really just continuing to understand how PFAS might impact them, where PFAS might have been found across our state. And, you know, really just continuing, like I said, really having these conversations, trying to see how the data we have about the land and water in Wisconsin, you know, what that broader story is.
And will you be updating this? I imagine communities are going to continue doing testing in the days and months to come. Will that info then end up on this site?
Yeah, so that was one of our you know, kind of top priorities as we built this tool out, was to make it as automated as possible. So as we get new data inputs in the existing systems, it more or less just automatically will show up in this tool. The other piece being that, you know, as we continue to expand our monitoring efforts, like with our drinking water, with new drinking water standards, every public drinking water system in the state will begin sampling over the next 6 to 9 months. And so we'll start to have an even more complete picture of how PFAS may or may not be showing up in our drinking water systems across the state.
And I wanted to ask you briefly about another DNR program. The DNR announced a program to collect and dispose of PFAS-containing firefighting foam waste. This, I think, from practice sites. Can you tell us just a bit about that program?
Yeah, so that is the result of a $1 million investment in the biennial budget. We're jointly administering it with the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. It really came to be through a very strong partnership with our firefighting community. Our State Fire Chiefs Association and others have helped us engage with fire departments across the state. Many of them have recognized the dangers or potential risks of using PFAS-containing firefighting foam and just haven't had the means to be able to collected and dispose of it. And so we're really excited about this opportunity to engage with our firefighting folks across the state. At this point, we have just under 300 fire departments who initially responded to a survey that they had foam they wanted to get rid of. It'll likely be even more than that across pretty much all counties in the state. And we estimate we'll get several thousand gallons collected and disposed of through that program.
Mimi, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Great. Thank you for having me.
That was Mimi Johnson, director of the DNR Office of Emerging Contaminants. I talked to her earlier today about the DNR's new interactive tool giving people access to PFAS contamination info from around the state. We've got a link up at WPR.org/Central Time. Let's bring Marquette University's Dave Strifling back in. A couple statewide efforts there, Dave. It seemed like for a long time the PFAS issue was this community here, this community there. Are you starting to see a more coordinated effort at the state level and in other ways?
Well, I think this new interactive data tool is just great. One of the most important things, in my opinion, that government can do is be transparent with people about the environmental risks they face, whether it's lead service laterals or air pollution or PFAS contamination or whatever it may be. Even if it's bad news, things that people don't necessarily want to hear, getting that information out there so we can react is critical. And in many of the environmental disasters that we've seen, that's one thing where government really failed. So, you know, I think this is great, and it allows anyone interested to try to put some of the pieces together in terms of where the contamination actually is. And the tool may not be perfect. It may not be complete, but it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Doug is with us in Marinette. Doug, hi.
Good afternoon.
What did you want to bring up?
Well, you're discussing what the company that caused the contamination in the Marinette and town of Peshtigo area knew and when they knew it. And I'd just like to point out that they discovered, their environmental consultants discovered PFAS contamination in the hundreds of thousands of parts per trillion on their fire technology center property in the fall of 2013. And then they retested 6 months later and confirmed that those results were accurate. And they did not inform anyone. They did not inform the DNR. They did not inform the public. And they did not submit any indication that this contamination was in the groundwater until the fall of 2016. So that's 3 years later. And then the DNR ordered them to start doing testing outside of their boundaries. And that in 2017 is when the residents in the area suddenly discovered they had poisoned wells. So this whole concept of we got a good corporate citizen that is trying to do the right thing, no, they're not.
Doug, thanks for the call. And Dave, Doug's timeline matches up pretty well with, I'm looking at our own Danny Kading's reporting on this, that delay between discovery and revealing this information to the DNR. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's really tough to figure out motives sometimes in a case like this. Could just be a cover-up, could be time for investigation, could be that they just didn't know what they had on their hands. And until all the facts come out, and the caller is certainly making a good case that they should have done something sooner. And often when the facts come out, that's what we conclude, that something should have been reported sooner. And the timeline does match up pretty closely with my understanding as well of the investigation that DNR has got underway there.
Doug, thanks for that call. Dave, we've talked in the past about different, sometimes dueling guidelines on what safe levels of these chemicals are in different kinds of water. The state might say one thing, the EPA another. And now the World Health Organization came up with a much looser guidance. What are you making of their findings? This is creating some controversy.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So, you know, DNR just set the health advisory limits to 0.004 parts per trillion for PFOA this summer and 0.02 parts per trillion for PFOS. That's really close to the limits of detection, meaning if you detect any PFAS in your sample, you're probably going to be over those limits. The World Health Organization just put out a standard of 100 parts per trillion, so orders of magnitude higher. And, you know, I'm not a toxicologist or a chemist. I'm not sure yet exactly what went into making that standard so different. But that's what makes this so hard. When you have an emerging contaminant and you're not sure of the science, you know, you could be precautionary and set the limit really low at the risk of, you know, curbing some economic activity. Or you can set it looser like the WHO did and say you want more proof. And, you know, where you end up is just a matter of policy. But that's where some of the disagreement comes in here with the scientific uncertainty.
And if I'm a company going to court over this, I might be really interested in those looser World Health Organization numbers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would think so.
in our last minute or so, Dave, what are you watching for next when it comes to efforts to stop and mitigate this problem?
Well, a couple of things. One is, you know, whether EPA is going to come out with a national drinking water standard. It sounds like that's in the works. And the other is that DNR has apparently restarted the process to promulgate a new groundwater limit for PFAS compounds. If you remember, that's one that was rejected by the Natural Resources Board last time around. So that's a longer timeline, 2 years to 30 months, but it's something to keep an eye on.
We'll leave it there, Dave. Thanks again for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
That's David Strifling, director of the Water Law and Policy Initiative at Marquette University. We talked to him today about several PFAS-related stories, including the town of Peshtigo suing Tyco and other companies for damages linked to PFAS contamination. Plus, the DNR has a new interactive PFAS information tool where you can look at testing results, cleanup areas, and more around the state. Again, we've got a link to that at wpr.org/centraltime, and you can see if there are concerns in your own community.